Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome to the show where we are going to prescribe hope for healthy families just like we do every day. We've got a great show lined up for you today. We're talking to all the boy moms, all the parents of boys today. We are going to have a show all about boys. So if that is you, or even if that's not you, if you have friends who have boys, we are going to talk about the individual challenges that are facing boys in our culture today. And we have a great guest lined up. But before we get to that, I just want to remind everybody, we are in a journey to develop 52 habits for healthy parenting this year. This is a new week, so we do have a new habit. I hope that you have joined in. All you have to do, by the way, if you're new, is just say, hey, I want to be a better parent. I'm going to listen to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show and listen for those habits and try to incorporate as much as I can. Our kids do not need perfect parents. They need present parents who are engaged and committed to their parenting journey. And consistency over time is where it's at. That is the secret sauce of parenting, I'm telling you. So we have prayer. We have scripture memory. We have plugging into a local church. We have listening to Christian music, practicing gratitude, listening with your face, a bedtime routine, sleep hygiene, daily devotionals. Last week, we talked all about morning routine, and this week, our habit is, drumroll, it is playing together. It is so important as a family to play together. When we are living at the speed of a smartphone, and we are so concentrated on making sure we're preparing for, you know, the right school, or the right sport, or the right social event, we forget that we just need to have fun. We just need to laugh and have fun and play together. And nobody needs play more than little boys. Let me tell you, we have a great guest for you. I'm thrilled to have Dorinda Wilson on. She has been married to her husband, Daryl, for 34 years. They have eight kids. And fun fact, I actually have two guests this week who have eight kids. So you'll have to listen in later in the week. We have another guest who has, as a mom of eight, she has 10 grandkids and they have been homeschooling for 30 years. Isn't that amazing? She is a very trusted voice and a resource at homeschool conventions, and she hosts the Dorinda Wilson podcast. And you may be a listener to that if you're not, and especially if you're a homeschooler, you should be. She is the author of four books, The Unhurried Homeschooler, a simple, mercifully short book on homeschooling, The 4-Hour School Day, How You and Your Kids Can Thrive in the Homeschool Life, Unhurried Grace for a Mom's Heart, 31 Days in God's Word, Raising Boys to Men, and God's Word, and then the book we're going to talk about today, Raising Boys to Men, a simple, mercifully short book on raising and homeschooling boys. Dorinda, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here and talk about this topic. I'm really passionate about it.
I love that, and bring all the passion, because I'm passionate about this too. You know, I'm a mom of four. I only have half as many kids as you do, Dorinda, but I was a mom of two girls first, and then I had two boys. And when my girls were little, honestly, Dorinda, I have to confess to you, I really thought I was a pretty good mom, but then I realized, oh, no, honey, you're just a girl mom. Like, and then I had my boys, and God humbled me, because I love my boys just as much as my girls, but they are so different. So when I was pregnant with my first son, I was actually put on bed rest for some pregnancy complications I had. I didn't even think twice about needing help with my girls. I dragged in their dollhouse and their little tea party set, and they played happily all day at the foot of my bed. They took care of me. My boys, I think, would have burned the house down. So tell us, I mean, never could you leave boys unsupervised like that. But tell us a little bit about you and your family and why you're so passionate about being a boy mom.
Well, out of our eight kids, five are boys. And we did the same thing as you. We did the two girls first, and then four boys in a row, and then a girl, and then a boy. So we had those four little boys in less than 6 years. So there was just a big shift in our household towards that. And then out of our, now we've got our 11th grandbaby on the way, and seven of them are boys. So, wow. and most of them live right on the same property with us. So I'm around this all the time, constantly getting refreshers about raising boys. But I am passionate about it because I have had the privilege of seeing the results of really investing in our boys. And of course we invested in our girls too, but for me as a mom, because I'm a woman and not a man, so different than them, there was a learning curve for me. And I think there is for every mom out there, just because we're not wired the same. And can I just say that is a really good thing? Mm-hmm. I think this is something that we really are struggling with in our culture. It's just these we're really actually in a crisis when it comes to the culture and the church and masculinity. And I think that much of the church has kind of bought into the culture about just kind of feminizing everything and getting so far away from what boys really need that there's not a lot out there for them in terms of how they're wired, how God created them. And so, because there's a lack of knowledge about this, we've just sort of slowly wandered away from that. Moms used to know this, like back in the day, it was just part of our culture. It's not anymore, and that has impacted the church as well. So all that to say, that informs our view of boys, and then our view of our boys, and so then it becomes a real battle for us as moms because we know that there are differences. But we struggle to reconcile what we know to be true about our boys and what the culture and even a lot of the church is saying about them and how they just their aggressiveness and different things. I know we're going to talk about a little more in this show. But I'm just really passionate about equipping moms because moms of boys specifically, because like I said, I have seen the fruit of investing in those boys and my boys are all grown now, and the relationship with them is so sweet and so wonderful, and I love what they're doing. I love who they've become, but that started way back at the beginning when they were still at home.
It's so true, and I've shared this story before. I'm sitting across from my producer, Stephanie, and she had boys before I had boys, and one day our kids were like in preschool, and we're at a playground, and my girls, of course, are picking flowers, right, which by the way, Dorinda, is right. One of the big differences I learned between girls and boys. My girls pick flowers for themselves. My boys pick flowers for me. I mean, that is pretty amazing. But we're sitting there and they're you know, just kind of, you know, playing with little rocks and making a little castle and they are picking flowers. And I look at Stephanie's son and he's going up to the top of this play equipment and there's a fire pole. And instead of sliding down the pole, he's just jumping off the platform, like just straight jumping off of it. Scared me to death. And I looked over at Stephanie as I'm looking at her right now. And I have to confess, I judged her. I really did. And I thought, are you not even watching your son? And I said, I went over and just kind of, you know, tapped her on the shoulder. I'm like, I don't know if you see this. And she said, why do you think I am facing the other way? I don't want to see that. I cannot look at that. And honestly, Dorinda, you know, I could not understand that in the moment. I really thought like, this is crazy. But now I understand having boys trying to restrain their energy sometimes is like holding back the tide. You just can't do it. And you have to let them take risks in a safe way. So that's why how I ended up letting them put a mattress off the bunk bed to make a slide. You know, I figured, well, hey, there's a mattress, right? Like it's padded. So that's good, right? Or the time that they made, you know, 100 paper plates on the wall for Nerf gun practice. They put them on there with gum, by the way. But you talk about in chapter one of your book, you talk about changing our expectations. And thinking about those things that you expect for boys, including being grossed out regularly, expecting them to push boundaries, expecting to go to the emergency room. I can attest that is true. Can you talk about just some of those expectations that we just need to reset from what you're talking about? Like, just expect those things from boys instead of trying to push them back or minimize them or put them into a mold that was really created for girls.
Right, exactly. And so you talk about, you describe sort of like what it looks like to put a lid on that energy and that aggressiveness and that, well, energy is the best word to use because they just have so much of it. And they need to get that out. And so there's just, we need to provide ways for them to do that. The thing that I think is really important when it comes to expectations is when we talk about being expecting to be grossed out, it's not that we're saying, okay, they're going to do this and we're just going to let them do that whenever and wherever. We're going to set boundaries. Like that's something that's part of our job is to teach them to read the room, you know, the time, the place. Is this the appropriate people to be doing this around? Or is this something we just do at home, that you do at home with your brothers or, you know, just with family or whatever? So we get to decide that as parents. And so I want to make it really clear when I talk about letting boys be boys and expecting them to be boys, we're also guiding them along the way. But again, when we say, when we change our expectations, we're not broadsided then by their behavior and, you know, aghast, you know, we're like, what is wrong with him? He's never going to be a civilized human being. You know, I'm raising a Neanderthal, you know, all these things. And you cannot judge your four-year-old son and look at him and try to see the kind of man he's going to be. Because there's a long journey between now and then, and it does require us to, like you said earlier, be engaged, but we're directing and we're not expecting them to be girls. So you talked about pushing boundaries. Again, we're going to teach them the time and the place that they can do things like roughhouse. And we want to keep those boundaries secure, but also be ready for reasonable compromises. You know, if they're being respectful and they have a reasonable compromise, be willing to listen to it because they think out, they think differently than we do. And often their approach is different. And sometimes that approach is perfectly fine for them to do. Expect to laugh a lot. I think this is so important for moms to know. We need to laugh with our boys. We need to be goofy with them. When we are goofy with them, believe it or not, they feel valued by us. And that is something that even if it's like, oh man, that is so disgusting, I think I'm going to puke, you know, they think that's hilarious, you know? And so those kinds of responses and reactions they live for, you know, and these are the things that sort of tie our relationship together. You said going to the emergency room, like they need to do dangerous things and take risks. And I often say our biggest job is to keep them alive, but don't hear me saying we're going to be a helicopter mom because we're not. We're going to have to be wise. We're going to have to assess the situation and decide for ourselves whether this is, we're willing to take the risks that are here. And I have tried to say yes more than I say no as much as possible. And that has really helped a lot. The boys, it's really kept a certain amount of respect between us because they realize when I'm doing that, that it's not easy for me, but I respect them as boys and men who need to do some of these things. My daughter, who's 21, a while back, she said to me, Mommy, I've been thinking about some of the things you let the boys do. I said, yeah. And she said, why did you let them do those things? So I told her what I just told you, but it was like, again, that female perspective is like, you know, expect them to need lots of physical activity. This is a feature, not a bug. So, you know, I say 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old boy into a classroom for 8 hours a day. Personally, I think that is a terrible idea. So, you know, if we can think of ways to give them more physical activity, that's super important. Expect them to want to be independent. They're going to need time with dad and other boys to do guy things.
Well, those are things, Dorinda, that I'm going to hold you right there because we are going to dive deep into that. I really want to talk about boys in school. And we're going to dive into that when we come back. But right now, we're going to give away 3 books to the first 3 callers at 1-888-589-8840. That's 1-888-589-8840. 589-8840. Call in. We'll give you a copy of Dorinda's book. Little things can make a difference. A little note, a little smile, the small stone that David hurled at Goliath, and precious little babies. When you sponsor an ultrasound at preborn, your gift, no matter how small, makes a difference in a big way. Who will this little baby become? What giants will this baby slay? How about the mother who was spared from unspeakable sorrow because of you? You never know the difference you're going to make with a donation of just $28 to introduce a mother to her child through ultrasound, which doubles a baby's chance at life. All you have to do is take a few small minutes to make a life-saving donation. Preborn will take it from there as their network of clinics rescues 200 tiny babies every day and shares God's love with mothers. Preborn has a 100% charity rating, so you can give with confidence. Get involved today by dialing #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome back to my conversation with Dorinda Wilson. She is a mom of eight and a grandma to 10, 11. Number 11 is on the way. She's been homeschooling for 30 years, and she's the author of Raising Boys to Men, a simple, mercifully short book, which cracks me up, Dorinda, on raising and homeschooling boys. And before the break, we were talking about how boys are naturally wired to be aggressive. And Dorinda, I can tell you, this was a wake-up call for me. I mean, I'll see my boys like physically go after each other and wrestle or punch each other in the arm. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is terrible. And all of a sudden they're dying laughing. Like they think it's hilarious.
Right.
Not understand that at all. And you know, I can think of one time when my son was in kindergarten, we had gone to this little IMAX show about monarch butterflies. And it was so beautiful. It talked about this scientist who figured out that monarch butterflies migrate from North America to a secret place in South America. Nobody knew where it was. And they finally found, you know, where the monarch butterflies migrated. And there were just millions of them and columns of them. I was literally choked up, tearful, Dorinda. Like I'm sitting there in the theater like this is the most beautiful thing I have ever seen. And I look over at my son to see what his response is. And he's got his little knees under his chin and he's got his hands up on his knees and finger guns, like going pew, pew, pew like this at the butterflies. And I thought, we are different. So should moms be concerned about that aggressiveness in their boys, Dorinda?
Right. Well, I'm laughing because when you first started telling me about these butterflies, I immediately knew what your son was doing, that he was shooting them before you even said it. I just knew it. And so, yeah, no, moms, do not be concerned if your boys are aggressive. Again, this is a feature, not a bug. It does need direction. It does need our help in terms of teaching them discernment and all of that. But boys are wired by their creator towards aggressiveness. Now, there is a sliding scale. You've got boys who are more artistic and maybe less aggressive, and you've got boys who are on the very extreme side who just by nature have more aggression. So it can be a big, you know, it can be a pretty big sliding scale. But I think that overall, we can safely say that boys have more aggression than girls typically, because they were created to build, lead, protect, provide, and conquer. And you mentioned the whole with your boys, you know, like my boys beating the tar out of each other. I talk about this all the time. But this is how boys bond. You know, like you and I have a really, get a cup of coffee, we'll have a wonderful conversation, and we walk away and our cups are filled and we're just ready for life. That's what beating the tar out of each other does for them. And I never understood that or even knew that until I read, not the whole book, one chapter in a book called The Minds of Boys. And it talked about just the different parts of the brain that are functioning as they did these CAT scans. And boys and girls were doing the same exact activities, and they measured where was the brain activity. And it was almost in polar opposite sections of the brain, almost completely. So how women approach a problem versus how men or boys approach a problem is going to be very, very different. And so understanding, we don't have to relate to it. We just need to understand that this is how they're wired and try to nurture that that part of them in a healthy way. I think the one thing we always have to remember also is that boys typically have three questions running through their heads. And I learned this from Mark Hansen at Trail Life USA. He said, boys are always have these three questions in their minds. Who's in charge? Who's on my team? And what are we doing? Or what is our mission? So often when boys are kind of going off the rails, it's because one or more of those questions aren't being answered. And it's our job to answer those questions for them. So again, this is about directing that energy, not always putting a lid on it. Now, do they need to learn to sit still eventually for long periods of time? Yes. Do they need to do that all at once? Absolutely not. And I think it's so important for us to recognize that the culture does not appreciate aggression anymore because we have so many comforts and so much, we're pretty safe overall. And so we're not, you know, we're not running for our lives like we have been 100, 200, 300 years ago. And we actually need men still who are have that aggression. And I think in our culture, a lot of it is going to need to be directed more towards fighting against the moral and political overreach that's pretty determined to destroy the family. So we need men who are kind and understand how to help the helpless, but they're not afraid to wage war when necessary because they love what and who they're fighting for. G.K. Chesterton said, the true soldier fights not because he hates what is in front of him, but because he loves what is behind him. So if we can recognize that a lot of the time when our boys are being aggressive, they want one of those three questions answered that I mentioned earlier, or they're trying to walk out this desire they have to build, lead, provide, protect, and conquer, but they're doing it poorly or ill-timed and, or, you know, just wrong place, wrong time. And it's our job as moms to redirect that and teach them where and when to use that aggression.
Well, I'll give a shout out to Mark Hansen with Trail Life USA. We actually just had him on the show not too long ago. So if you're interested in learning more about that, it's a great outlet for, Mark Hancock. I just said it. I misspoke there. But with Trail Life USA, it's a great outlet for boys to be boys and to develop some of those skills and to have some of those adventures and those kinds of things, which is really, really important. Another thing that you said that's really important, Dorinda, I think, is you talked about boys having aggression and not stereotyping, you know, not expecting every boy to have the same kind of level of aggression. You talked about a spectrum where we have, you know, boys who are more artistic. And even in your book, you share about your husband's artistic bent and his artistic nature and how he had even reflected if he had grown up in another culture, another time, you know, that that might not have been received the way that it was. So we have that. And then we have boys who are naturally more aggressive. I think not too long ago, we have a lot of boys who hang out at our house. And there was, I heard one of the little boys, he was about 5 years old at the time. And I heard him say very aggressively, Dorinda, do you want a knuckle sandwich? And I ran out the garage so fast because I thought, oh my gosh, he's going to be in a fight. I opened the door. There's this little boy. There is not a soul around. There is no one there. And I just kind of looked at him and he said, I'm just practicing. That was it. Like even when there was nobody else there, like that was in his heart and in his mind. And I think one of the important things you talk about, Dorinda, is going back to how do we guide this? And that starts in school. And it can be really hard for boys in school today. I know that as a pediatric nurse practitioner, I know that I'm much more likely to have boys referred to me than girls for possible diagnosis of attention deficit disorder. But I think back to my own son when he first started going to school all day and he came home and I said, what did you learn today? And he said, well, I learned when the little hand is on the 10 and the big hand is on the 6, we get to go outside. That's what he learned. And they want to play. So talk about that and your perspective and how your homeschooling journey has created some space for you to really customize that for your boys and to allow them to have some of that exploration and flexibility in the schedule.
Well, I think one of the things that we did that was so helpful is we took an unhurried approach. So we didn't start in kindergarten with a pile of books. You know, our start, and I talk about this a lot in the Unhurried Homeschooler, that little tiny book that the first book I wrote, and it just describes kind of like what our days look like, and there was margin in our days so that all of the kids had margin in the afternoon, actually throughout their homeschooling years. But in those early years especially, we took an unhurried approach. We only took on what we felt like they could handle. And a lot of people think, oh, this is going to cause them to fall behind in their education. But actually, the opposite is true. When you let them take a start that is natural for them, they tend to actually eventually like schoolwork more than the kid who started out being pushed at the beginning. So that was a plan that we started out with, and we did it with our girls. But I'm telling you, with the boys, I think it was absolutely essential. Like, I think if we would have done it any differently, things would not have gone as well as they did. And I think that it's important to understand that if we follow our kids' natural love for learning and start reading and writing when they seem ready, they will respond so much better. And I mentioned before, studies have proven that there's no advantage to starting early. In fact, the opposite is true, especially for boys. When boys are pressured with too much too soon, they give up. Now, they might show up physically, but they aren't being encouraged to love learning. They've checked out, you know, and we don't want them. We don't want that for them. We want them to equate good experiences with learning. So for us, it was starting out gently and moving forward slowly as they were learning as they were ready, because forced learning isn't real learning. And so that took some patience and some trust in their natural ability to learn. But what I found was that the boys tended to kind of be behind the girls at the same ages, but eventually they caught up and often surpassed. So it's very typical in the early years that they're not at the same level as girls. That's very, very normal, and there's nothing to be concerned about. But a lot of boys end up being misdiagnosed, misunderstood, because there's just that lack of understanding of just typical child development. And so for us, this worked out so well, and we always made sure, like I said, that the kids had margin in the afternoon to create, to have hobbies, to just, and specifically to be outside a lot, especially the boys. And because we always gave that to them, they were more motivated to get the stuff done in the mornings. And I know that if our boys had gone to school, like, you know, you had mentioned before, mm-hmm. they would be diagnosed with, ADHD, ADD. And I'm telling you, these boys are smart, but the way they learn is different than, at least it was different.
That is very true.
That and nurture that.
Mm-hmm. I agree. That is very true. And I had to learn that as my boys, you know, went to school. I did not homeschool. But when they came home, mm-hmm. you know, I'd want to know all about their day. And I just want to talk, because that's how I connected. And we're going to get to this in just a minute.
Right.
But I had to learn, no. So finally, my son, one day he came home and he was just acting up in the car. So I stopped the car and I said, "Get out. And I just want you to run as far as you can. Just run until you cannot run anymore." And he had biggest smile on his face. Like, that was just mm-hmm. fantastic for him. He was like, "Finally, you know, I've been sitting cooped up and I can just run and just get that energy out."
Yeah.
And one of the things
important.
It is. And one of the things I want to dive into with you, Dorinda, is this unhurried approach. And this is, you know, you talk mm-hmm. about this a lot in a lot of different contexts, but we are living at the speed of a smartphone where it's like, hurry, hurry, mm-hmm. hurry. They've got to, we're already thinking in kindergarten about what high school are they going to go to? What sports are they going to play? What's the SAT? What college? And parents, I know a lot of times are really concerned about getting behind and learning, which is what you were just talking about. And I always emphasize to them, you know what? They can always learn trigonometry at any time. Mm-hmm. What they need to learn mm-hmm. now is how to relate to other people. They need to learn how to be resilient when they experience setback or disappointment. They need to learn how to be kind. They need to learn to have boundaries. Like, all of those things, honestly, are so much more important. And we saw this during COVID, where there's this panic mm-hmm. about, oh, we're going to be so behind on the STAR test. And I thought, yeah, but how many kids are getting more emotional and relational connection than they've gotten before? So I would love to hear you talk about that unhurried approach.
I would love to. So you're absolutely right. Those early years especially should actually be more focused on character formation than anything. So this is like we're living our days together, and I'm teaching my kids as we're going to the grocery store and to the library and all these different places. They are learning all the time. So we bring them with us. They see how we interact with the cashier. We teach them to be other-oriented. We have them help put things in the cart. They can count things into the, you know, put this many cans into the cart. Help me find this thing. Again, being aware of the people around them, using their manners. All of these things can be taught in a very natural life setting. And I think that's super, super important. And as we went into the book work aspect very slowly, we put more on their shoulders the more we could see that they could handle it. So we started out with very, very basic. So we're talking some reading and some basic, you know, learning their letters and then basic writing, and just kept everything very simple. And for the boys, gave them breaks between subjects, especially as we began to increase their workload a little bit. Okay, when you're done with this subject, we would tell them, you can go jump on the trampoline for 15 minutes. And I would set a timer, because inevitably I would forget, and then it would be noon and I never saw them for the 2 hours. And they happily came back in, and we were thrilled. They were thrilled. But what would happen is, because I gave them those breaks, they would have a chance to reset their brains. A lot of people call them brain breaks. Super, super important for anybody, but especially for boys, and especially in the early years. That bouncing up and down, that riding their bike. Some of mine went and played with Legos, which doesn't seem like a super physical thing, but sometimes that's what they needed. And the interesting thing about kids is, if you give them the space, they tend to know what they need. They'll know that day they need to play with Legos instead of riding their bike, and you let them make that choice. And in that process, they learn how they learn best. And pretty soon you've got a kid who knows how they learn and is able to have that lifelong learning as part of their character.
Well, I love that you talk about that. And you also talk about the importance in this day and age of video-based curriculum, particularly for homeschool curriculum, about the value of face-to-face interaction and how important that is. And I know as a nurse practitioner that the number one predictor of resilience in kids is having a meaningful connection to one adult in their life. Well, when we come back, we are going to talk more about this, and we're going to talk about how we need to use fewer words with boys as moms to connect. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to my conversation with Jorinda Wilson. She is a mom of eight. She has 30 years of homeschooling experience. She is a pro boy mom and a trusted voice and a resource at homeschool conventions. And on her podcast, the Jorinda Wilson Podcast, she is the author of Raising Boys to Men, a simple, mercifully short book on raising and homeschooling boys. And we've been talking about just the natural bent of boys to how they're different, how they're really different, and how we can be different and respond to those individual needs and temperaments and just ways they have of expressing themselves as moms, especially because we're not boys. And so sometimes that world can seem foreign to us. But Jorinda, before the break, we were talking about directing aggression and creating boundaries. Mm-hmm. You said teach them to read the room. And there's a way also that we can implement a work ethic into this and teach them respect and responsibility. So how do you do that? What is your wisdom to share?
Well, I've talked a lot about redirecting energy or redirecting that energy towards something productive. And so, but what I didn't tell everyone was a way to do that. And I talk about different ways to do this in my book, but one of the biggest ways is work, physical work. So one of the things that, you know, the Lord has given us as a gift is work. We know that in the Garden of Eden, God gave Adam and Eve the whole garden to steward. So he gave them work before the fall. So that says that work was and is a good thing. Okay. So that is a gift from the Lord. It is something that I believe that scripture teaches, and something we need to instill in our children is a strong work ethic, because our kids can have all kinds of skills and abilities, but if they have no work ethic, those skills and abilities are not going to serve them nearly as well. So what we do when we give our kids opportunities to work, we teach them perseverance and resilience. We teach those situations where they have chores and responsibilities and work to do. It brings out heart issues that need to be dealt with. And again, we're back to character. So it gives us opportunities to be really tuned in to their true character. Because if life is always good and easy for them and they don't have to work hard, do we really know what their character is? You know how that tea bag in hot water, that's when you mm-hmm. find out what the tea is really made of, right? When we teach them a strong work ethic, we give them something to conquer. This is especially important for the boys. They need something to conquer. And so we direct that energy towards something to conquer. And when they have a strong work ethic, when we're teaching them that, we're building confidence in them and skill sets that open up opportunities down the road that we might not realize are going to be there when that time comes. But that work ethic is so important, and it's not going to happen if we're not intentional about it. And one of the best ways to do that is to take that energy those boys have and direct it towards work. So, for example, I've got a son who is just poking the bears all over the house. You know, he's just causing problem over here and over here. And I will say to him, I might give him a warning, but then after that, I'll say, okay, all right, a hoe, I want you to go out to the garden and I want you to weed. Or here's a flower bed, lots of weeds, I need you to pull them all. And you're just going to give them a job. Here's a closet, I need you to organize it. Here's a yard full of leaves, I need you to rake them up. If you don't have any of those things, buy a bag of rocks and have them move a pile of rocks from one side of the yard to the other. But the physical work is what they need. It helps them work through. Like, you and I will talk a lot of times through our issues and our problems and the things that are bothering us, and that's how we figure out what's really going on. Most of the time, those boys need to go work, and then they will figure out what's going on.
Well, my father-in-law, I know my father-in-law is listening, and he is going to be laughing right now, because that's exactly what he had his son, my husband, do, is just move the woodpile. Like, you just go out there, and I just want the woodpile moved. Don't ask why. It just needs to be moved.
Right.
But you also talk about making it as fun as possible. You know, it's not like it's punitive. We can make work fun. And the other thing I want you to talk about, Dorinda, is speaking of gardening and all of those things outside, you talk about this concept of tomato staking. Now, I can't grow anything to save my life. I'm sorry. It's a character flaw that I'm working on. My mother-in-law is trying to, you know, train it out of me. But I loved that concept. So can you share that with us?
Sure. You know, when we are growing a tomato plant, we have to stake it to something like a stick or something that will basically stabilize the plant. Because what happens if you don't do that, the plant gets heavy and it bends over, and then the branches break and you don't get the fruit that, you know, the harvest that you're hoping to get. And it's the same thing with our kids. Sometimes they're just off. Okay. So you've got this kid who can't seem to get along with anybody. It's been all day long. And you can just say to him, you know what, buddy, I need you to just come with me right now. And so it's not a confrontative, punitive type of thing. It's very relational. You know, come on with me. I'm going to fold some laundry. Oh, here's a pile of washcloths for you to fold. Let's fold together. And you just start talking about things he enjoys, you know, and it's amazing how the conversation can eventually land on what it is that's really bothering them, because you've taken the time to slow down and just be with that child relationally. And they're in your presence. They feel safe. They feel loved. They feel valued. And then all of a sudden, it's easier for them to pull up that whatever it is that's really bugging them. So you've had this conversation, you just talked with them, had fellowship with them, and then you say that maybe you'll broach the subject and say, you know, I noticed you're really having trouble getting along with everyone today. Is something bothering you? And typically I would get an answer. Sometimes something was bothering them. Sometimes they were overtired. Sometimes they didn't realize they weren't feeling good. So instead of just bringing down the hammer because, you know, oh my gosh, this kid's driving me nuts, you know, we're going to pull them in and we're going to stake them to ourselves, because basically what we're doing is the same thing we do when we're off. Like, we stake ourselves to God. We go to him and we just stay close to him in his presence. And we just say, God, I need you to help me just align with you and what's right. And so we're helping our kids do that when we bring them in and we invite them into that scenario. And then you can, once you realize you've gotten to the bottom of it, you say, okay, buddy, do you think you can go ahead and get along with everybody? You think that's going to work out? And he'll be like, yeah, I'll be fine, you know. And he goes and he plays. You watch him. And if he starts in again, you pull him back in. But more than likely, he'll be just fine. And so that has been a super helpful tool that we've used in our family.
I loved that picture of that. And I'm thinking, you know, when I see something with my girls, I'll tell them, okay, hey, let's come talk. And they love it. I mean, they'll crawl up on my bed and get right next to me. And we're like, and then usually what happens with my girls, Dorinda, is they'll start talking to me. And if I try to ask questions in the middle, I'll get a finger held up in my face. They say, Mom, please hold your questions till the end. I need you to hold your questions. And the boys, it's the opposite, right? Like, I'm pelting them with questions. Like, what's going on? Nothing. Well, it seems like something's going on. Nothing. Mom, nothing. What is going on? Like, I'm really thinking about nothing. And so you've shared so much good wisdom. Honestly, I was still soaking it up because I still have teenage boys at home, about using fewer words to communicate. So share with us the struggle and tell us there's hope, Dorinda. Tell us that as moms, we can train our tongue.
Yes, we can. And this is part of respecting and honoring how our boys are wired. So I'll tell the story real quickly that I tell in the book. Our four boys that are all in a row were teenagers. I was super frustrated with them. I felt like every time I talked to them, it was like it was pinging off. Like, there was nothing registering. I wasn't getting results. And this was like several days. Finally, my husband and I went out on a date and I just unloaded on him. I said, these boys are driving me nuts. And I told him everything that was going on and he patiently listened. And then we got in the car, we were leaving the restaurant. And he said to me, I need to tell you something, but I don't want to hurt your feelings. Ugh. And at that point, like, I've gotten everything out. I'm at a loss as to what to do. And so I'm ready. I'm ready to hear what he has to say. He said, Dorinda, you use too many words and the boys don't respect you when you do that. And I thought to myself, I knew this. I already knew this, but when did I forget? Because we forget, right? So I go back home, gather the four boys, and to this day, they remember that day because they thought they were all in trouble. gathered the four boys and I looked at them all and I said, this is what I told your dad. This is what he said. Is he right? And they looked at me and they said, yes, Mom. Yes, they said, we would rather feel physical pain than listen to you talk. Oh, and they weren't being disrespectful. They were being honest. And I knew that's what was their motivation in telling me that. And I just said, okay, all right, here's the deal. This is going to be really hard for me. But because I know this is important, I want to make this change. So here's the deal. If I make this change and I use fewer words, are you okay with instant kind of painful consequences if you don't listen to me and do what I'm asking you to do? And they said, we would rather have that, Mom. We would rather have that. And so I had to retrain myself. Here I am, you know, years later, I'm a writer. So obviously I love words, loved words back then, loved conversation. I would repeat myself, you know, because I thought I must just not be saying it right. And that was not the case. I was saying too much. And so I learned to stop before I said something to them, kind of bring it down to bullet points and communicate to them what I needed them to know in 15 seconds or less. And that made all the difference in the world. And recently this mom, she heard this story and she reached out to me. She said, this is a terrible idea. You're teaching your boys that everyone has to talk to them the way that they need to be talked to, and what are they going to do when they're married someday? And I said, whoa, wait a minute. Look at the context of the story. These are boys who are in their teen years. They're going through massive hormonal changes. Mm-hmm. Women, we know what this is like, PMS, menopause, postmenopause. Okay, they're experiencing their own share of all kinds of stuff. And some of that is just brain farts. You know, they're not hearing you. So you have to work with them. And for them in this phase, they needed fewer words, okay? And so I respected and honored where they were as boys, as boys growing into men. And I didn't make them feel bad for that. I tried to work with it and said, I respect that. I'm going to try to work with you. And we worked together, and there was a mutual respect there. Where it could have been disastrous, it turned into like this relationship building thing, because they saw me saying, I understand you're different than me, and I'm willing to make changes. Now, fast forward, three of those five boys are married, and they all have wives who love to talk. And they're very verbal, and they handle it just fine. So when they get closer to, 19, 20, 21, into their 20s, they developmentally can begin to handle a lot more of that. It's going to happen. You're not training them poorly. You're meeting them where they are and respecting and honoring them.
Well, this is so hard for me, Dorinda. And honestly, my husband has had the same kind of pep talk with me that your husband had with you. And he'll tell me even now, like, put the stick down, Jessica. The horse is dead. And I'll say, yeah, but, I got to take a couple more whacks at it just to make sure, And then I realize, like, okay, I've said the same thing 15 different ways. Like, do I really need to do that? And at that point, I realized it was more about me and me needing to feel like I was heard rather than meeting them, just like you said, where they were and giving them what they needed to hear. And that important carrot part of that is the consequences. So you, in your book, you suggest like having a list of those on the refrigerator. I actually did this too. I had a jar where I had just chores in the jar. And so if my boys were disrespectful or whatever, they knew I didn't need to press play on the lengthy lecture that I had given them. I would just point to the jar and say, go pick a chore. That's how this is going to go down. And that is really important. Well, Dorinda, we're almost out of time together, but I do want to finish with saying the most important words that you say over your boys are prayers. And in just the 2 minutes that we have left, can you share the scriptures that you pray over your sons and leave us with that word of affirmation?
Oh, gosh. Well, I don't even have them all in front of me. But I do recall, I put these all in the book, but so many prayers, but not all at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think that just praying that God would prepare them for the plans and purposes that he has for them, that he would teach them to love him with all their heart, mind, soul, and strength. Talking with them or praying for just protection for them, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. There's just, again, all those scriptures are in the book. I'm not looking at it right now, so I'm having a hard time pulling it from memory.
Well, that's okay. You need to get the book because, listen, she prays that their sin would find them out, and she prays that they would seek justice and love kindness and walk humbly with their God. And I agree so much with Dorinda that it is a very powerful experience to pray scripture over your sons and to let them hear you doing it, to know that those are the words of life that you're speaking over their word, over their heart and their lives. Well, we want to congratulate Kim from Arkansas, Loretta from Texas, and Donna from Louisiana, who are all going to get a copy of Raising Boys to Men, a simple, mercifully short book on raising and homeschooling boys. And you can find Dorinda at DorindaWilson.com. That's DurendaWilson.com. And we'll see you next time, friends.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.